here we are again. Thanks for joining me. It's time for another It's All About Food show, and I'm Karen Hartglass. I'm really glad you're with me today, or whenever you're listening to this show. As always, I really appreciate your interest in plant food, healthy plant food, delicious plant food, and compassionate food. And today it's going to be fun, I promise. So let's talk about vegan food for the rest of us, shall we? I have the author of the new cookbook, Vegan Food for the Rest of Us, here on the program today. Anne Hodgman is the author of 40 children's books and 5 cookbooks, most recently the one we're going to be talking about, Vegan Food for the Rest of Us. Her work has appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine, The New York Times Book Review, Gourmet, and just about all the parenting magazines. She lives in Litchfield County, Connecticut, where she plays year-round ice hockey. She is married to writer David Owen, and they have 2 adult children, both writers. Anne, welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, I'm glad we got it all figured out, and I'm very appreciative to my dear friend Nancy Pines for making this all possible. So Nancy, whenever you tune in, thank you. I love you.
And I do too.
I imagine that I don't even know how you connected with Nancy, but I imagine it was back in her children's books days that you connected.
Yes, we were at Bantam Books. Oh, it seems like a century
a while ago.
We were in the children's book department. She was a wonderful publicist for them, and I was an editor. And she's such a good booster for every place that she's ever worked that we were easily able to stay in touch, and Facebook made it even easier.
Yeah, I remember those days at Bantam. I got to walk around the halls of that place a few times when we'd meet for dinner.
The world of publishing must have changed so much. I sometimes think I could go back to publishing, and then I think, how? I don't know anything about the way editing is done on computers or anything. I mean, it seems like a different world.
It is.
I suppose the internet is a good replacement.
I'm going to guess, as an editor, you must be frustrated because not only in books, but online, it's like editing doesn't even exist anymore. Or what happened to grammar?
I know. You know, well, it's complicated. I think that the internet is very much to its credit has naturalized people's language and made it more conversational, which I think is all to the good. But there's so much content now that I don't know how anyone ever can. You know, there just aren't enough people to keep track of how much content appears. And there aren't enough. And certainly on the internet, there aren't enough people to pay for making sure the content is in good shape. It's quite we're in a little bit of a challenging time for publishing, and I'm not sure I will live to see a satisfying resolution. I hope I do, but it's a weird time to be a print person.
It's a weird time, Anne, period.
Well, yeah. Yes, it is definitely a weird time. To be sort of flooded with information about everything all the time, it can be very challenging. And I mean, for example, to take vegan cooking, I was talking to an older man at a book signing the other day, and he was saying, well, how are you going to feed all these vegans if you don't have cows to kill to get manure? And I didn't know where to start with that. And he said there's it was 32 million head of beef cattle in this country. What do you want to do about them? And I said, reduce their numbers. That was the only thing I could think of to say in person. What he was saying to me was the way of life you're espousing is actually challenging my livelihood. He was a beef producer. I do hope that those kinds of jobs will gradually disappear as people eat fewer animals. But it's true that almost every food challenge or food point of view steps on someone else's food point of view. If you're a vegan, you're going to be using more land, that, you know, taking up more habitat from animals. It's sort of hard to know where to. You can't draw the line. You just have to do your best, is what I've concluded, and hope that you're making the right choice ultimately.
Well,
without just being sure.
If we lived in an ideal world, If we lived in an ideal world and we had a functioning and fair government. when we recognize that an industry was no longer necessary or was behind the times, we would find a way to help those who were involved in that business to find new and challenging careers.
Right, and interesting careers, absolutely. And, you know, ideally, well, I hope that could be done. The difficulty, of course, with beef production, and I didn't say that to this poor man, was that, for example, the main reason that the rainforests in South America are disappearing is because they're being used to make ranches. Anyone who thinks that's a fair way to use a rainforest is, I have nothing to say to that person. It's very hard to even be civil. But a lot of people don't realize that that's the case. It goes back to the vast, vast, vast amounts of information that's out there and how do we sort of filter it to make our own lives livable and bearable. That's one of the things with this book, I wanted to make it a little bit easier for people who were starting out in the vegan world. I'm not myself a vegan, but I'm a vegetarian, but I thought, well, there must be other vegetarians and even omnivores like me who want to explore vegan living, but they really would like the food to taste good, which can be a challenge with vegan food. And I thought, well, at least if I am a vegetarian, it means I know what certain things like dairy are supposed to taste like. So I won't be trying. I won't be saying this tastes exactly like cream cheese when it tastes like something that makes you want to cry if what you're expecting is cream cheese. I knew how to imitate. I learned how to imitate stuff, and I learned what stuff really could not be imitated. Because I think it all has to start with how the food tastes if you want to win people over.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been a vegan for almost 30 years. And
wow,
my greatest successes have been putting the delicious food in people's mouths. There's no doubt after that. You just say, eat this. It's delicious. You can do it. That's
exactly
the best way to do
it. And then
it.
They're happy. They're scared, you know, because people are really scared. It's funny how food is such a tough challenge in so many different directions. I mean, you see little kids who are afraid of all different kinds of food, but you also see, I marvel still at the fact that people will think that, for example, something made of plant protein like tofu is disgusting compared to cheese. You want to say, wait, the cheese came from inside of a cow. How are you saying that something that came from inside a cow's udders is less disgusting than something that's made from a plant? Clearly, these things are very subjective, but people's frame of preference, as I like to call it, really is very narrow. And you do have to convince them with good tasting food, not with punishing them by making them feel guilty, which I wanted to be very careful not to do in my book.
Right. You know, there's a few things I wanted to respond to from everything you just said. I don't know if I'll remember them all, but regarding the guy at your book signing and the manure, I always like to say manure like Woody Allen would say manure. So we talked about veganic agriculture on this show. It is possible, everyone, to grow plants without putting animal excrement in the soil. Oh. But, you know, the earth, Mother Nature is really smart the way she reduces, reuses, and recycles. And putting excrement, human or non-human, into the soil, letting it compost, is the way we get nutrients back in the soil. It's beautiful and it works. But it's amazing how people in a certain field, the experts, sound like they don't even know what their field is about. I had an opportunity about 3 years ago to talk to 250 cattle producers about animal agriculture's impact on global warming. Mm-hmm. And they asked me, well, what would happen with all of these animals? What would happen to them? And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, you breed them. You know how you make them. Yeah. You would just stop breeding them.
Exactly, exactly. And you would, you know, they wouldn't suffer because they hadn't been born, which is incredibly an argument that some beef producers use. Well, by giving these animals life, we're doing a favor for them. Of course, we're absolutely not. But it's very hard for people to imagine change. And I think certainly when it scares them, when it's related to their livelihood, I do feel sympathy for it. And I also understand that it's really, you know what, I just realized I just kind of interrupted you. You said you had a few things to say, and here I'm just babbling away.
Oh, please babble. I love the babble. You're an excellent babbler, probably almost as good as your writing.
Well, thanks. Well, I can't remember. No, let's see. I was saying that vegans, there are very nasty vegans out there, some of them. They call themselves, they call us easy vegans and themselves, I guess, real vegans. And there's a certain punitive quality to some vegan writing that that makes it sound as though it's a very, very easy choice, when it really isn't. If it's very hard emotionally for people to sacrifice the way they grew up and to sacrifice what they think of as their patrimony. What do you do on holidays? How do you, what if you're going to grandma's house and she's making a big turkey? Those kinds of things really frighten people. And I think it's important for them to acknowledge that they are making a huge change and that they can make it gradually. It's any change is better. Any change in the right direction is better than none. And, there's this new movement called reducitarianism that just is arguing for eating less animal protein, period, hoping that they can get more people to follow that than they've had success getting them to completely abandon meat. But I think people are so... I get the feeling that people are thinking, don't take away my treats, don't take away my emotional sustenance. And I want to make it very clear in this book that that does not have to be done. You can make food that is comfort food and could work for holidays and is enough of a treat. It's a challenge to make vegan desserts taste good without eggs and dairy, but it can be done, and they don't have to taste like a pile of, you know, sweetened oatmeal. They can really taste like what they're supposed to taste like. There are some great developments for things like aquafaba, which makes a wonderful foamy liquid that you can produce by whipping up the liquid that comes in a can of chickpeas, and it makes a completely convincing meringue. It tastes exact and functions exactly like a meringue. I don't know how they discovered it, but it works. And that, once you know that, you think, well, I don't need to use egg whites anymore. I just did a lot of experimenting and testing stuff to avoid that sort of, well, I guess this kind of tastes like meringue, that feeling, because I wanted people to have the know that they were getting exactly something. It might not be exactly the same, but it would be exactly as good as what they were giving up.
Oh, aquafaba. I would like, if there was a Nobel Prize for food, it would go to the founder of aquafaba.
It's so incredible. I don't understand. I mean, someone obviously knew about plant proteins when it occurred to him, and it was a guy, I just don't remember his name. When it occurred to him that you could whip this liquid, now I just want it to be standardized because, you know, every can of chickpeas is not the same as every other can of chickpeas, and I would like to know that if I'm using 8 ounces of aquafaba, it's going to be the same from can to can. But they'll get there because there must be tons of chickpea liquid waiting to be used.
So much chickpea liquid is wasted. All of those.
Exactly.
It just drives me crazy. I've made lemon meringue pie, and it's incredible. I think I might even like it better than when I had lemon meringue pie over 30 years ago.
you might very well, because there is an actual bad taste to eggs. That once you notice it, you don't like them as much. I don't like to eat, I just can't eat plain eggs anymore, just because I don't like the way they taste. I used to, but I just don't now. And so I think that the aquafaba, once it's whipped, there's just no, and certainly once it's cooked, there's no hint of where it came from, which again is not disgusting to begin with. A can of beans, the liquid that they were cooked in, is not more scary than an egg from a bird. when people think about it's just not that. It's a simpler way to eat. It's a cheaper way to eat, and it's less complicated and tastes delicious. So why not do it?
So let's jump into the book. The first thing I want to say, I want to read what was most important to you when it comes to not eating animals. Okay. And you write that no matter how nice you may be, eating animal products causes suffering on an unimaginable scale. The animals we eat are born into slavery, raised on slave ships, and set free by being killed. And thank you for that.
Well, it's really the truth. There is no way around that. There's no way around. People now, I'm amazed by the number of people who will say, yeah, but dairy cattle, they're not being killed, so that they're better off. They probably suffer more because they live longer than beef cattle, and they never get to graze in many cases. I read a book called Just Food by Jim McMullen. We've all had these moments where you just think, okay, I'm going to stop saying that one day I'll make this change. You read or see one detail that converts you right away. And for me, he was writing about how dairy cows are sometimes up to their stomachs in sort of manure and hay and litter and stuff because the stables don't get cleaned out. And I thought they're standing in, stomach deep in this excrement and this rotten old hay. All right, I don't want any part of this. I'm done with a world. Whether it makes a difference or not, I just don't want to be part of that world anymore.
Thank you for that. So I mentioned before that I forgot exactly how we said it, but things are weird right now, and the world of politics is weird, and many of us are very frustrated and feel like there's nothing we can do, and there is something that we can all do to make things better, and that is eat plants and not animals.
That's absolutely right, because you are reducing the amount of sentient suffering on Earth. Saving land that could be, you're helping to save land that might otherwise be used to feed animals. Most of the soybeans in the United States are just grown to feed cattle, which it's kind of a waste of a soybean when you think what a miraculous amount of protein it has. And you're also, you're just thinking it's better for people's karma, well, even for their self-perception, to think, I may not be doing something, I don't know how much help this is, but I know I'm trying. That's a very much better head to be in than, it's probably not a great thing that I'm doing, but I'm going to try to ignore it. That really drags you down. When you're sort of thinking, well, at least I'm one of the people who's trying to make a difference, you just feel much happier in the long run. Even though you've had to learn about some things you might – often people don't want to learn about veganism because they don't want to know what the animals are going through. To that, I always say, you do know. You know what they're going through. It has not escaped you. You're waiting for something so horrible to hear something so horrible that it will shock you into – changing your ways, but you already know the truth.
Know the truth. Worth repeating. Okay, Anne, let's jump into the book. So it's very fun to read, and I like the anecdotes. And even when you give directions on how to make a recipe, there's nothing dry about it. You give some great detail in some very conversational language that I know is helpful to many people, especially if they don't know where their kitchen is.
Well, thank you. You do have to, with vegan cooking especially, because the chemistry is different, it takes a certain amount of explanation, more than you might need if you grew up and were just using Fanny Farmer books you'd been using as a child. But I also... I love to read cookbooks, so I want the whole thing to be interesting. When I read a cookbook, I want the directions to be interesting, and I want there to be lots of anecdotes and lots of head notes and little asides. And I really tried to put that in because I think it's fun to have a book that you feel as though the author is actually talking to you. I wanted people that's the effect I was going for.
Okay, the first thing I wanted to mention is what's not in the book. There are no green salads. There are no green smoothies.
Yeah, correct. Right.
But there is hummus. And I want to talk about the hummus.
Okay, good.
Because I get a lot of vegan cookbooks. I review a lot of vegan cookbooks. Some of them have hummus, and I always like, oh, yeah, there's the hummus. We have to have hummus. My partner Gary and I, when we go to social events, that doesn't have much food for us, we always say, at least there's hummus.
Right.
And I really encourage people to make their own hummus because it's easy. Mm-hmm. And so many hummuses that are out on the market today are made with such crappy ingredients.
Yes, they're off. They're like glue.
But the one thing that popped out is that you peel your chickpeas. I wouldn't even know how to peel a chickpea.
Well, I knew you were going to say that, and my editor said, "Anne, is this really necessary?" Well, of course it's not necessary, but the premise of the book is this is the best version of the recipe that you will find. Obviously, people don't have to peel their chickpeas, but it is amazingly much better if you do. If you sit down, you just pick one of the shows that you've been meaning to glut yourself on, that you've been recording forever or that's on Netflix, and you take a pile of chickpeas and you just pinch them between your fingers and the skin slides off.
Wow.
And then you put the chickpea into another bowl. It's not hard. It is time consuming, and it's not you're not going to be able to make a vat of hummus that way, but you can. You do make a hummus that everyone who eats it will say, "This is the best hummus I've ever had. How did you do it?" And mm-hmm. So, for special occasions, I definitely think it's worth it. I wish that there were an easier way. Maybe one day they can sell chickpeas that are already peeled. That would be perfect.
Well, there's probably something nutritious in that peel, but
yes, I'm sure that there is, and there's certainly in fiber.
I have no problem sitting in a Zen mode and taking peels off. I make my own almond yogurt at home. I soak the almonds, I remove the skins, and then I make yogurt from it, and it's phenomenal. And I make it every 2 weeks, and it is so worth it. So, I can get into that personally. I know many people can't, but I just had never seen that. I didn't even know the skin was there. So I got to look for those chickpea skins.
I was very surprised. I was very, very surprised to find that out myself when a friend brought some hummus over, and this was her recipe. And it never would have occurred to me. I mean, it was like, it really was like jokingly saying peel a grape. But it can be done. And yeah, it's exactly like taking the skin off a soaked almond. It's the same feeling, and it's the same sort of finickiness, but the result really is justified or justifies the amount of time. So I'll stand up
I'm
for that,
wondering.
But I'll support you if you make a different hummus also. They're all good.
They're all good. Hummus. I have a private joke with my sister. Hummus is hummus. But obviously not all hummus is the best hummus.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, but you can't screw it up. What I mean is people who if it drives them crazy to think of peeling their chickpeas, don't do it. I like doing it, but that doesn't mean everyone's going to like doing it.
That's
and they'll
true.
Still come up with a perfectly good product.
People tell me they don't like broccoli, and I say, fine, you don't have to eat broccoli. There's plenty of other great green vegetables out there.
You don't have to eat tofu. One of the challenges for me was trying to convince my poor husband, who is a meat eater. He's from Kansas City, and he eats bacon cheeseburgers like 6 or 7 a week, probably, to convince him to eat things like seitan. And in fact, we ultimately gave up on seitan because the texture was great, but the there was something indefinably scary about it. And I thought, I'm going to stop trying to scare my husband. He said, I wouldn't mind never having this again. And he had been so patient and nice about so many of the things that I had made. And I thought, I want people like Dave, my husband. I wanted to have the Dave, pass the Dave test. So I just took seitan out. I still use wheat gluten in a few of the recipes, but I have not succeeded in making a great seitan that meat eaters will love. I could probably choke it down myself, but I wanted to have every recipe be something that Dave would take seconds of or eat leftovers of. And so that was the criterion I used.
Okay, next. You write, anything you can do with a scallop, you can do with an artichoke heart. I didn't know that.
Well, you picked two things that my editor has said, wait a minute, why did you say this? Or wait a minute, are you sure this is true? That was another one. But it's really true because I don't know. I mean, it's the same size as a scallop, an artichoke heart. It's not exactly the same consistency, but it's a suitable enough consistency that, for example, if you want to, in the book I give a recipe for artichoke hearts almondine because we loved, in our old life, scallops almondine and soft-shell crabs almondine. And I suddenly thought, wait, you could get an almond lemon sauce and flour the artichoke heart and fry it, you know, saute it at a high heat, and it would be just as good. And then I thought, well, you really can. When I thought about a lot of the recipes where scallops are used whole, I think artichoke hearts are a very suitable substitute, and we use them a whole lot. I get them frozen. I don't get the jarred kinds, but I get them in plain frozen ones, and they're wonderful.
Well, that's great to know. I pick out the things that I'm not familiar with. And that's what I want to talk about because I'm selfish here. It's my show and I can talk about whatever I want.
Yeah, I honor that.
Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is flax gel cubes. I've been using flax seeds for decades.
In cakes, in baked goods, you mean?
In everything. I put flax seeds in everything, but I bake with them and I sprinkle them on sugar. Cereals and salads. I've made flax crackers, all kinds of things, but I have never, on a rare occasion, I have soaked the flax seeds in water and then put them through a sieve so that I didn't have the fibrous shells, but rare. So tell me about why flax gel.
Well, because flax gel is a very good egg substitute in baked goods where you do not want the texture of the flax gel husks. And it also tastes, I mean, I don't mind the taste of flax. I like it fine. But if in a classic vanilla cake, for example, if it's going to be, I would rather not have any hint of anything except what it's actually traditionally supposed to taste like. And flax gel, it's not hard to make. You just bring flax seeds to the boil with water and you do sieve, put them through a sieve, and then you I use a bulb baster and just bloop 3 tablespoons of flax gel into ice cube trays and freeze them. That means that I don't have to grind seeds or add seeds. I can just take 2 flax cubes when a recipe calls for 2 eggs and very often make a direct ingredient for ingredient substitute. So I recommend that you try them. They're gross looking, and then when they melt, they're even grosser looking. But they won't be gross looking in the recipe. They just disappear, and they have that same, you know, they make the, I don't care, what's the word? They just make the baked texture. They make it have the structure that an egg would give it, without that crunch that flax seed husks might give it. So that's why I do them. Also, that can be, you know, you spend an hour doing it, you could end up with 36 flax cubes, which would take you through quite a lot of baking if you just have a freezer that you can get them into. I have to be sensitive to the fact that I live in Connecticut and I have a big freezer. I do understand that people who live in cities don't have tons and tons of freezer space. So it's vegan cookbook should not say, store this 5 pounds of seitan in your freezer because you just may not have the freezer space.
Okay, now speaking of storing 5 pounds of something, let's talk about your 10 pounds of macadamia nuts.
Yeah. Were you troubled by them?
Oh, no. Well,
okay.
I do use a lot of cashews. I don't mind cashews, and I find they're more readily available, maybe a little cheaper. But I do appreciate a good macadamia nut. And I just want to tell you, before we talk about macadamias, have you tried Cheese Hound vegan cheese?
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about it a little later in the program, but they've made some macadamia nut based cheeses that are amazing.
Oh, good.
And they're not widely distributed, but there's a store in Brooklyn called Riverdale, and they have most of the vegan cheeses that are available today made in the traditional cheese process. And you can try them all. Mm-hmm. It's just an incredible experience.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds wonderful. Do you know if they do mail order too, or I'll look them up.
Yeah, Riverdale, the store might, and I don't know about Cheese Hound. But if I find out, I'll let you know offline.
I'd love to know. Cheese Hound is one word or two?
It's one word, and it's with a Z.
Oh, awesome. Okay, yep. They have that's good to set it apart.
Because you may know that here in New York and in other states, we're not allowed to call certain products that aren't made from tortured animal milk cheese or butter.
Right. It's crazy. Yeah. It's silly because they're considering that they're still made from a kind of milk. They're just not made from cow's milk. But, we'll fight. That's a battle we can fight later.
Let's go back to the macadamias. So you use them in a lot of things.
I do. And I use them wherever traditional vegan recipes use cashews, because I myself think that the taste is a little bit less noticeable. And also, for the very useful reason, the macadamia nuts are fattier than cashews. And it's hard in certain vegan recipes. The missing fat is often why the recipe doesn't taste quite right. But you can't just, stir oil in to something like, if you're making a version of macaroni and cheese, a vegan version of it, you can't just add oil. You need to start with something that won't break apart and be sort of liquidy the way oil will. And macadamia nuts can be pureed until they're very, very smooth, and yet they will have a more unctuous mouth quality, a mouth feel when you eat them. That's why I use them, and I buy them in bulk. Just because I have this large freezer and I can, and I just use a few ounces at a time. 10 pounds of macadamia pieces, which is what I get on Amazon, unsalted and raw, that costs, I can't even remember, but it took me 3 years to use up my 10-pound bag. So it's very economical, certainly less expensive than meat. So, I think that the added creaminess that it imparts to, especially to main dishes that where you want a creamy quality, is worth making the switch from cashews.
I just may have to do that, but my freezer is filled with 5 pounds of nutritional yeast that I buy in bulk.
Oh man.
And pounds of Fungus Among Us dried mushrooms, because I like to always have mushrooms available, and a whole bunch of other
things.
Yes. Maybe I can find some room for that too. Probably. Okay. I could talk to you all day because I love talking about food. But I just want to ask you maybe one more question. And that is, you authored some other cookbooks, maybe in a previous lifetime. One of them is called One Bite Won't Kill You, with illustrations by the fabulous Roz Chast.
Oh, yes. She's so great.
Are you thinking, perhaps, since you've been involved with children's books, that maybe there's a vegan food for children book?
You know, I would love that. It's because children are really leading the way for a lot of parents these days. Many families become vegetarian now because the child will say, "I don't want to eat something that was killed." And parents who have been sort of vaguely dragging their feet about at least becoming vegetarians will say, "Well, okay, we'll just all become vegetarians." And I think that, of course, you want to make sure, little babies, there's an argument for their eating some animal protein. But as soon as they're 5 or 6, they really can manage with a vegan diet very, very well. I think that would be a lot of fun. And I think you're basically asking the parents to get involved, and that, so it would depend. It would sort of, you'd be preaching, having to preach to people who are already converted to the right way of doing things, I think. I'd love to do a vegan holiday book, because I think it would be very beneficial to families to be able to get stuff that was exactly as good as the sugar cookies they make at holidays. So that may be the next one I tackle.
Excellent. Well, Anne, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. I had so much fun reading your book and fun talking to you, too. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, and let's talk soon.
Okay.
Thanks for having me
on. That
sounds
good. Okay, thank you. That was Anne Hodgman, the author of Vegan Food for the Rest of Us. And it is a different kind of vegan cookbook because it's filled with all kinds of tasty, delicious, comfort kinds of foods. Like I said, this is not a green salad, green smoothie cookbook. No, this is all fun, delicious, yummy food with soups and appetizers and desserts. All good. All right. Let's talk about some other things. Going to check my notes here. Yeah, so first I wanted to talk about Riverdale. And if you are a reader of my blog, and I hope you are, then you may have seen one of my recent posts. A few days ago, I went to the Riverdale cheese shop in Brooklyn. And what a treat it was. And I have to tell you, I don't know what I expected, but it's a tiny place and they have a selection in their cold case of a variety of vegan cheeses. They have Miyoko's cheeses, they have Kite Hill, and they have some other brands that I haven't quite made it to Whole Foods or some other places yet. They had Bright Life and Vetopian and Violife. And as I mentioned before, Cheese Hound. And the woman there, Liana, was very helpful. And as she saw us struggling and not knowing which ones to buy, she said that she could make us a sample of 5 cheeses. And there were 3 of us. And she gave us little samples. And I can't tell you, it was so much fun. And it was amazing just to try these different ones. And as I mentioned before, I've been vegan for almost 30 years. I've been through the introduction of vegan cheeses, the awful manufactured industrial soy-based, rice milk-based things that we call cheese. And then they were awful. And they're still out there, and some people eat them, but okay. Then there was Daiya. And Daiya, recently purchased by a Japanese company, is now going to probably explode. And I was excited about Daiya, but I didn't love it. It had tapioca in it, and that's what helped with the melting. But I just didn't like the mouthfeel at all. But it's very popular, and it's really helped the vegan scene. Different companies have picked up on their shredded cheese and put it on pizza, and you can get a vegan pizza in different restaurants. All that's good. But not great. And now the great cheeses are here. We tried a blue cheese by Violife. They actually call it Just Like Blue Cheese. And it tastes like blue cheese. I never thought I'd have that taste. Try that taste again. Now, I can't say that I like blue cheese. Whether I do or don't, it doesn't matter. It tastes like blue cheese. We were also told that the Cheese Hound version, which she didn't have available for sampling, was better, and I can't imagine it. We tried the Cheese Hound Molchanok. It's a macadamia-based cheese, and it has this amazing smoky flavor to it. Just, I can't say enough about it. This was really a fun experience. If you have a chance, if you're in the New York area, you must visit Riverdale Cheese or at least go to their website and check them out. So there are lots of good things happening on the planet, and some of it has to do with cheese. Okay, back here at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters, if you've checked out some of our recipes, and we have hundreds of them, or if you've read the blog occasionally, you know that we like to make our own fruit butters. We make apricot butter all the time. All it is 1 pound of dried apricots. We use organic, unsulfured. Cook them in 3 cups water till the apricots are soft, and then blend them up and put them in jars. And it's the best apricot butter, apricot jam I've ever eaten. And it's easy. And if you get a good deal on apricots, is much less expensive than if you bought it in the jars. And it's such an easy thing. And I've done the same with prunes and made prune butter. I've made raisin butter, and most recently, fig butter. So we found some really good priced organic figs and made fig butter. And when you take, are you hungry? I'm getting hungry. When you take a piece of sliced apple and you put a thin slice of that Cheesehound Molchanok cheese and then a little bit of the fig butter. Oh my goodness, what an amazing flavor combination. I hope in your lifetime you have a chance to experience that because it is amazing. Amazing. And I was thinking this week, I was agitated because I had had this unfortunate experience, which you could read about in one of my blog posts. I don't want to get into it, but I'll tell you what day it is so you can check it out. What day was it? Day 906. Yeah, it's a long story, and I don't want to get into it now. But to relax and calm down, I like to make food. And as I mentioned before, every 2 weeks now I make my yogurt. And there's something kind of romantic about it, like reaching back to my ancestors and doing traditional things that people had done long ago. And I bring it ahead into the present. Making yogurt feels like that. Making sauerkraut feels like that. And it relaxes me. And I think that maybe that's what some of the paleo people get when they make their bone broth, that they feel like they're doing something that people have been doing for hundreds, thousands of years. Maybe that's the appeal. You have to know that I am totally anti-bone broth. And but one day I'm going to do a little video about it. Just haven't had a chance. But there's something really lovely about making traditional simple foods, and I love having them in the house. A few things I wanted to talk about that are in the news. We've talked about Hampton Creek a number of times. We even did a video on mayonnaise and mayo. And Hampton Creek is one of these companies that is making plant-based foods like mayonnaise. But they get a lot more press than some of the other vegan mayonnaise companies. Other vegan mayonnaise companies include Veganaise, which happens to be my favorite vegan mayonnaise. Neonaise, which I think was one of the first. And Trader Joe's has their own vegan mayonnaise. Follow Your Heart has a vegan mayonnaise. But Hampton Creek is the sexy one because they've gotten involved in the high-tech world. They've gotten a lot of investors interested in them. And as a result, they have gotten the traditional mayonnaise-making people very nervous. And you may have heard a couple of months ago that Target took their Hampton Creek Just Mayo products off the shelf because they had been alerted that there may be pathogens and problems with the product. And we have just learned, there's an article in TechCrunch.com that came out yesterday, and Hampton Creek had to hire an some investigators to get to the bottom of this because there was nothing wrong with their products. And the FDA had confirmed there was nothing wrong with their products. They approved their products and said that the claims against the company were false. And so some anonymous source had sent letters to a number of different companies, including Target, saying that there was a problem with the Hampton Creek product, and Target bit and took these products off the shelf. And I hesitate a lot when people talk about conspiracy theories and talk about how big corporations are really against us and do all kinds of evil things. But here's an example of that. So I just wanted to alert you to that. If you had heard the story about Hampton Creek's Just Mayo Foods, just know that their food is fine. And there'll probably be more of these sorts of things in the future. I mean, you may remember that Unilever tried to sue Hampton Creek. And they even teamed up with, I think it was the American Egg Board. It was a real conspiracy where they tried to fight with getting Hampton Creek's products on the shelves, and they did it in a fraudulent way. That was discovered back in 2015. Really incredible. Anyway, I wish Hampton Creek all the best. And you can eat mayonnaise, vegan mayonnaise. You can make your own. We have a food show on our website, responsibleeatingliving.com, to show you how to make one kind of vegan mayonnaise. There are many kinds. Your vegan mayonnaise can be oil-based, it can be cashew-based, and it probably could be macadamia nut-based, although I haven't made one, and it's probably delicious. Your mayonnaise does not need to contain eggs, even though the FDA defines mayonnaise as an egg product. And that's why the companies that make the vegan versions do not call it mayonnaise. They'll call it mayo. They'll call it a salad dressing, all kinds of things. But we know what it is. We know that it's mayonnaise one day. All of this will come to a head and we can all live happily ever after. But until then, we fight. Something else in the news. Are you familiar with the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org? They have a tap water database. I just discovered it. And you can put in your zip code and find out if the drinking water in your area has pollutants in it. And this, I think, is good to know. What they've discovered is that most tap water has problems in it, having toxic chemicals that are above the allowed levels. And this is a cause for concern because we all need water. We should all be drinking our tap water. And we've heard the horror stories in Flint with the lead in their drinking water, which is still not resolved. So first, it's good to be educated, and it's good to know. So I invite you to go to the environmentalworkinggroup.org and check your tap water. Now, what's the solution? The solution is not bottled water, because bottled water is devastating on the environment. Bottled water uses far more water to make the bottled water than what's in the bottle. There's no guarantee that the water in the bottle of water is free of contaminants. And because it's in a plastic bottle, there's a lot of opportunity for unwanted contaminants to leach from the plastic into your water. So plastic, bottled water in plastic is not a good idea. And if you've heard me before, I am a big believer in distilling water. And if you want to know the distiller that I like, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. It's always on my homepage. I find the routine of making distilled water one of the other almost romantic things that I look forward to every day. I make my water. Sometimes my partner Gary calls it going to the well. But I know that I'm making pure, clean water for myself and my family. And it gives me peace of mind. Now, there are many filters, many different systems that you can use to purify your tap water. And I know it can be confusing. I've got it on my list to make a video about water purification. Haven't gotten to that yet. I hope to someday soon. You'll hear about it if I do. And I've chosen distillation. And there are reasons for that. And if you have any questions about water and my thoughts, you can email me. I'll answer you. info@realmeals.org is the email. info@realmeals.org. But first, find out if the water you're drinking is clean. And the thing is, the database from the Environmental Working Group is based on state water records when they've tested water. But what about every other day when the water isn't tested? There are spills that get into our water system all the time. Some of them we never even hear about. So there could be a time when contaminants get into your drinking water and you don't know. And that's another reason why I distill my water every day. And plus, I love the taste. That's water. Okay. Another thing I want to talk about is, let's see here. I've got just a few more minutes left. Let's talk more about food, because I always like ending on a happy, yummy note. So I have a brand new recipe up at responsibilityandliving.com, and it's called African Peanut Stew. And the funny thing is, I think it's funny, I made this dish about 11 years ago, and I loved it. And for some reason, I never made it again. How does that happen? And it's funny to me because when I made it 11 years ago, I had made it because I had all the ingredients in front of me that would go into the dish. And I looked at them and I thought, oh, I've got West African peanut stew right in front of me. And that's what I made. And it happened again. Now, I don't make the traditional West African peanut stew that has chicken in it. There's no chicken in this. And yes, I've taken the liberties to make a lot of substitutions, but I still call it that because I like to. Mine uses chickpeas. You can use other beans like black-eyed peas. But it's the key ingredients, I think, are collards. And you can also not use collards. You could use spinach or another dark leafy green. That's fine. But the sauce. The sauce is a tomato peanut butter base. And that's the secret. When I first combined tomatoes and peanut butter, it was amazing. And it's just, to me, an unusual combination. An unusual combination from my personal culture and heritage. Obviously not unusual in West Africa. But it's really yummy, and it's easy. And if you want to check it out, we've got a recipe for you right there, Responsible Eating and Living. The other recipe I wanted to point out is our sourdough crepes. And I just made it kind of by accident. I was playing around. I wanted to try a few things and made these crepes. They're gluten-free, of course. They've got my almond yogurt in them. You can use any non-dairy yogurt, of course. And we've had them. I made enough so that we could have them 3 days in a row. And we finished them up yesterday. And I'm eating them. And I'm saying, oh, my God, these are just the most amazing pancakes or crepes they're just incredible. And I wasn't expecting that at all. So if you have a chance, you might enjoy trying them out. They do have aquafaba in them. The amazing aquafaba. That's the bean water we talked about earlier. And I can't wait to see all the great things that are going to come out in the future with aquafaba. Yeah, so should we end on aquafaba? A yummy note of pancakes and Sure. Oh, one more thing. You know, we have an app. We have an app for iTunes and an app on Google Play, and we've had it for a number of years now, and occasionally I remind people to get it, and I personally use it all the time. When I want a recipe, I go on my phone and I check the app. I just discovered that the iPhone app has not been downloadable, and I talked to the wonderful volunteer who created it today, and he said it should be back tomorrow. So if you haven't downloaded the app yet, please. They're both under the health and fitness section. They're hard to find. And Google Play, I think it's under Real Space Worldwide. And iTunes, it's under Real Dash Worldwide. Or you could just go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and there are links to the homepage. I hope you get our app. It's free and fun. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and have a delicious week.